Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back.
That's right, that's
it's
right.
It's going to be us. We can drink and talk shit as much as we want. Nobody can say anything to us.
D.L. Hughley, uncut.
Hey, now, welcome to D.L. Uncut, D.L. Hughley Uncut. I'm, of course, D.L. Hughley.
I'm Jasmine Sanders.
And I'm Jeff Brown.
It is, it's interesting because this is a year anniversary of the pandemic. There were a lot of things that about the pandemic. Obviously, the deaths, the unemployment, the damage, the carnage, things we'll never forget. Good things, I think, came out of the pandemic. I think finally people got getting to see how our systemic biases have affected us in all kinds of ways, right? Mm-hmm. I think that, no traffic was dope.
For a
it was
while.
Super
yeah,
dope.
That was great.
Those menus where you take it with your camera and you ain't got to have no stupid-ass waitress to hurry up and get your menu. You ain't got to do that no more. And we were born of the pandemic. This show was born of the pandemic. One of our things that we were willing to do a live TV show when no one else would. So, yeah. And we got COVID doing it. So, yeah.
Well, that's kind of how
it happened.
We took
the first hit.
We did.
That's
we did.
That's kind of how it happened.
It's very interesting because, you know, a year later, now I guess I read recently where now there have been more people vaccinated than ever got the vaccine. I mean, than ever got the virus. And it does look like, I don't want to be presumptuous, but it looks like we're definitely kind of moving in the right direction.
We are. I think we still have a long way to go, especially when it comes to the minority community. We're still lagging behind, unfortunately.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's because of the mistrust that we have in the federal government. Yeah. I think the mistrust that we have in any type of authority, actually, because we feel they don't have our best interests at heart.
Well, they never. If they do, it will be the first time in history.
Sure. Where do
so
we get
it's,
that?
It's a very new relationship.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're like, you ever had a puppy or you know, like a pet that was abused, and every time you do something, you could be going to give it water, and it's like,
yeah.
Oh!
Yes.
Yeah, and I think also when you look at the optics of it, right, because if you're already in a situation where most black people don't trust the vaccine as well as the test, and then you see a lot of these places that are popping up, so you want me to show up, go to this tent, stand outside, you know, and there's no air conditioning. There's just a fan, and it doesn't look so, you know, clinical. And take a shot.
Yeah.
Nah,
yeah.
I'm gonna
last
pass on
time
that.
Niggas showed up at tents. We got sold.
It just doesn't look good.
That backs up his point about the puppy master relationship. In that new relationship, who is it on to foster the security, the puppy or the new master?
Well, I think you're absolutely right, but I guess Biden's dog just started biting the shit out of people.
Yeah,
just,
and both of them had to go.
Right. One of them was like, nigga, I just don't like you.
I didn't do anything.
What did you do? Yeah, take him.
Yeah. Now they're talking to his trainer, and the trainer's like, I'm going to get these dogs in line so they can get back to the White House.
Yeah, well, I got a dog like that. But come over and talk to Charlie in a minute. I feel bad about Meghan and Harry. I feel bad about her treatment. But part of me... can't help but wonder, what did you like, you know, all the royal family, like most of us grow up and our parents tell us, you ain't better than nobody else. They grew up and believe they were.
Of course.
They believe that they got, when they're kings of England, they believe that they were born to lead and be royal, and they're better than everybody else. They're ascended from gods and deities. And when people say, like, the white people from here came from there.
Yes.
And they were so terrible to those white people, they came here.
If terror could be put in ships, they are the family on the biggest ship.
So what did you think?
Absolutely.
What did you think? I mean, it's hard for me to feel sorry for somebody that lived in a castle.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really believe that she thought, because Harry is far more progressive than William,
yeah,
right? And I think she thought, he's going to protect me, they're going to protect yeah him, and all of it was yeah, well, a lie.
She was in
no
suits, he came from a knight in a suit of armor. It's not
right,
the same
yeah
thing. Let me, if it's
terrible,
I would be protective. Like, I know what it's like to date royalty. Once I went on a date with the heiress of the Pink Moisturizer family. Let me
oh,
tell
wow
you something.
That's big.
And they...
That was so different.
That's big.
And they,
so
and they were so protective of that formula, Jack.
Let me tell you something. Lots of curl activated for you, huh?
Yeah, and I mean, I think also, though, there was a point that was made about, you know, well, her relationship with the Queen and Harry's relationship with the Queen. But my thing was, if your relationship was so great and the Queen protected Andrew but didn't protect you,
well,
or the baby,
Andrew,
that speaks volumes about the relationship you thought you had.
Andrew wow didn't bring home a black baby.
Yeah, but he brought home babies.
Yeah, yeah, but guess what? They were of a certain hue.
And he was hugging them, if yeah you know what I mean.
I think that I have a new grandbaby who I
yes
adore. Now, one of the things is you always look for the parts of that baby that look
you
like you,
mm-hmm,
right?
Sure.
So I think that it's probably difficult for somebody to see themselves.
Yeah, but in all honesty, let's look at the baby. The baby don't look a whole lot like her side of the family.
Yeah, you know what? Because he ain't hit that sun. He ain't hit that LA sun.
Now, when he turns five, it might
yeah
be different.
Right.
But right now, he looks a lot
yeah
like Harry.
It's,
mm-hmm,
it ain't Archie. It's Prince DeAndre.
Right.
He's here.
Wait till he races his cousins outside.
This is what's disturbing to me. Like, when you leave England and come to America to escape racism, that is a
wow
fucked up diaspora, Jake.
Wow.
I mean, I know it went from the UK to UKKK. But I don't feel bad for, like, I love that he loves her and he gave up his potential. Well, he was never going to get the crown.
He was never going to get a crown.
So he gave up, you know, his connection, financial connection to the royal family.
Well, just
family
the royal family, period. Yes.
Because I know for me, as much as I love my family, if I were at risk of losing even the potential of being a king, fuck them niggas. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Well, fuck them. I love Tyler. I love the kids. But you can lose your crown. Bye, niggas. See
okay
y'all later.
I believe DJ Quick has a song that covers this.
You don't get the fuck out of my castle.
Well, again, if you look at Harry, he was always different. He was always sort of the black sheep of the family. He was, and I think maybe because he knew he'd never be king. So if you think about it, every piece of footage that we ever saw of him, he was always in Africa.
Yeah,
he
yeah
was always dancing
yeah
with the nudies.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was different.
Okay. He was with the jigaboo. He was with the spirit checkers.
Okay.
He was with the spirit checkers.
How honest are we being?
He's the only member of the royal family that can hurl a spear. I know that shit. And let me tell you that. I respect that man because he gave it up. Nigga, I could be the heir to White Castle if I had this time. If you love me, you get, bitch, if you don't get out my house. And take the scent of oily fries off you, get the fuck out my castle.
Yeah.
Because
he lived in the castle. He
I'm
did.
The
he
wrong
lived in the
person
castle. Never drove a car. Like, he was just, you know, royalty.
Man. I mean, I love you. I mean, she's a beautiful woman.
Yeah.
Beautiful woman, and love is love. But, you know, nigga.
My daddy yeah owned if my daddy owned three liquor stores, I can't do
if
it.
If I was a producer on a Prince album, I'm not talking to nobody.
Right.
Goddamn mine.
Yeah.
Are you crazy?
And you had to move here and live in another man's house.
Yeah, I want you to get rid of Tyler Perry's house
a lot. Yeah.
You in the house, you went from the Queen's house to the house Madeira built.
Look
you
here.
Your goddamn mind.
That's how good blackberry pie is, bro. That's how good
the
pie is.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome back to DL Uncut. Our next guest is five-time Grammy Award-winning artist. Her song, Show Me Your Soul, from the documentary Mr. Soul, made Oscar's Best Original Song. Please welcome Layla Hathaway.
Hey, now.
Hey.
Ain't you tired of winning all these goddamn
Oscars?
No,
she's not.
I mean, all these Grammys. Wait.
First, we're not up for an Oscar yet.
Oh, yeah. Then
but I like the way you put that into the
zeitgeist.
You have to.
Prophesy.
So where do you keep all your Grammys at? Where do you keep them at?
Some of them are in a box.
Not on display in the living room?
No, because I moved at the top of the pandemic, and I have still not unpacked anything.
That would have been the first thing I unpacked. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't even have a bed.
Well, I got two of them out in the house so I can remember. But the rest are in the box.
I know three people who I think of. Three. One was Charlie Murphy. One was Natalie Cole, and the other is you. Who had these iconic, people that they were in the sphere, be it their brother or their fathers, and they crafted their own way that was distinctly different than those luminaries who preceded them. And that takes a lot. But I remember. Charlie Murphy had Eddie Murphy, of course. Natalie Cole had Nat, and you had Donny Hathaway. And the thing about it is, I never got the sense from either one of you, unfortunately two of them are not here, but that they were struggling to be anything other than who they were, but they obviously were impacted by the things that the people that preceded them. So to be able to do something like that, I thought, I've only known three people to be able to do that.
That's amazing, and I appreciate that. And I'm honored by that. And I'm somewhat honored by it because you included Charlie Murphy, because he's like one of my favorite comedians of all time. And I see music and comedy are so similar.
Thing.
And so I appreciate that. Yeah, it's so nice to be thought of in the same breath as such a legend. It's so nice that I've been able to figure out my path without worrying about who I come from or where I come from. I was just able to become myself.
That says a lot about you, because I think most people would be either intimidated, and want to kind of emulate it, or just, have a disdain for it. But you just hit it right in the pocket. Was that always the case? Because it had to be some moments. You very well aware that you want the daughter of one of the greatest male vocalists of all time. So you can't tell me.
Oh, yeah. The greatest.
Correction.
Okay. As far as I'm concerned. To be the daughter of a father is different, I know a lot of women who have famous moms that are in various industries, and lauded in their fields. And I think it might have been different had I been a boy. Had I been born male, they would have named me Donny Hathaway and I would have been trying to sing, and that would have gone horribly wrong.
Right.
So the fact that I'm a woman and can follow my own path and I can walk right alongside him, I think makes it different.
Is it tougher because around the holidays, it's all Donny Hathaway for two months at a time. It's all Donny Hathaway. It's all that. It ain't even Christmas till I hear Donny Hathaway.
It's Christmas. That's right. Is it tough? No. It's gorgeous. It's, you know how like when regular, when your grandma dies, she just be dead?
It is what it is.
You're a great janitor, but
like,
you'll never.
You know, your granddad and grandma would just be gone.
You'll
be
never get a job at Hallmark. I know that. That bitch is gone. She gone.
She was evil anyway.
There's something about it's a double-edged sword, because my father is never gone, particularly because of what I do. But it's a beautiful thing to have his voice and to have that countenance right with me,
Is jazz gone?
Is jazz gone? Uh-huh. Gone where?
I mean, it doesn't enjoy the set. I think jazz and comedy are two American art forms that I don't think get the appreciation that it deserves. And I think
agree.
That to be appreciated, like something I always heard about jazz is that a prophet has no honor amongst his own. So like oftentimes you're more popular in other parts of the world than here, its birthplace.
Or in death.
Yeah.
Or in death.
Yeah. So yeah.
It's because jazz and comedy, in a way, in my mind, are super black art forms, and until we begin to teach them as history and as storytelling, like they actually are, they're not going to have that kind of stuff.
So you think that its viability is rooted in the ability to teach it as a part of history, and instead of just a specifically an art form, but how it narrates and informs where we've been and where we're going.
Yeah, that's the deal with black music. I think, you know, so much of it is from the field. So much of the music that people enjoy all around the world is informed by, like, the black American experience, really. To be able to teach that as the history of black America and therefore the history of America, we're not really ready for that yet.
Right. Right.
But it's important to me that it's as important to me, black comedy, black art, black music, as important as arithmetic, English, all of that.
You have jazz for nerds, right? Like it's
jazz nerds.
What is because I love jazz and I love the candy, so it's almost the same thing.
There you go.
What is a jazz nerd?
A jazz nerd is a person like me that has kind of an understanding of music and an understanding of jazz. And who is nerdy? It's really simple. Some of the people I'm aligned with, like, I don't know if you know Robert Glasper or...
Of course I know Robert Glasper.
I mean, how nerdy can you actually be and into jazz? We have a podcast, and we just started recording these podcasts, and we did some for the Winter Jazz Festival, and I was able to talk to some people, and Terrace Martin and Amber Navarin about jazz and about being in this industry as a musician. Sometimes the music part of you and the industry part of you don't meet.
Right.
But it's important to talk about it, and particularly for people that are into it, it's nice to have conversations, real conversations about music. You know
what's interesting is jazz and nerd, those just don't kind of blend, because
they're super the same thing. Super.
And I'm gonna tell you, the most cool dude I've ever seen to date is Miles Davis. He's the most quintessentially cool. If you called him nerd, he would stab you with his fucking horn. But
I bet you he was a nerd.
You think so? Now I'm actually a nerd, so now I take heart in you telling
me. I think that there was a part of Miles that was a nerd. I mean, he was educated, he understood his craft. You know what I mean? Each decade that he lived,
yeah, he went to performing arts school. Yeah,
he went to performing arts school. Yeah. I mean, Herbie Hancock, he's like one of the biggest nerds I know.
Who do you, you listen to all kinds of music, classical. What is your favorite? Like when you're trying to just mellow out, what do you listen to the most?
It depends on the mood I'm in. It's hard. I have so much music and love so much music, it's hard. Some days I'm chilling out and I want to hear yacht rock. I want to hear soft rock from the 70s, Ambrosia, Doobie Brothers. There's some days when I'm chilling out and I really want to listen to classical music. I really love Debussy. There's some times I'm chilling out and I really want to hear deep soul like Sam and Dave and Luther and... It just depends on my mood.
I'm always interested because I think music, love, math, and laughter are universal languages. Like, I've never met any person that said they didn't like music. Now, they might not like your kind of music or my kind of music. You can't. It's impossible for you not to like music. It's impossible for you not to like to laugh. It's impossible for you to be in love. So
Did you say math, too?
Math is a universal language. Like, it's finite.
See, you're a nerd. You telling me all facts right now. Nerdly.
No. That's not that. I'm so goddamn cool. I don't want to outshine no goddamn body. That's why I'm like this. I hold it in. But it is. Math is very, it's a universal language.
And music and math are very
the same thing.
Different.
Same thing. Yeah. And there has to be, when you say nerd, I get it, because there's an intellectual component that's specific to great musicians and great artists. And I think to be a great jazz artist, there's no doubt you have to be a great musician.
To be a great artist, period. To be a great rapper, you got to read and write. You know, to be a good artist. When I'm listening to Kendrick Lamar or DJ Quick,
right,
or Big, I know that they understood how to interpret a story and give it back to you. And that takes brain.
Right. That, well, jazz has a demand and a specificity. They're able to improvise because they're so ingrained. They know exactly what they're doing. So they don't have to. They know the basics backwards and forwards. They don't have to. But the thing I it's interesting because you're in a phase right now where jazz doesn't have the resonance it once did, but you are finding a way to connect to an audience. Like you're like Alexander Graham Bell to admit the telephone. He had to want to talk to people that weren't even there. Like they don't even know they like jazz. They don't even know. Do you feel a burden? Do you feel like to connect what could be to what was? You feel like you're kind of that bridge?
I do. I don't feel a burden about it, but I definitely feel like, you know, I see people do these things where they have old school, new school.
Right.
I feel like I am both old school and new school.
Right.
I feel like I am just school. So it's inherent in what I do to pay homage or write that love letter to that thing that came before me that I'm able to stand on top of and make something with, and then to give it to someone in the future just like it was given to me. And that's really important. That's how you learn Farsi. That's
right.
How you learn, you know, this is how you teach language.
Right.
And that's history. That's really important to me.
You have 5 Grammys so far, and it looks like you have for a couple more. There has to be a way. Do you know that when you're doing something, oh, these motherfuckers gonna love this? Do you think that? Do you ever, like... Because if you can put Grammys in a box, which is already a song, I think you should write that. But
okay. Only one time have I ever had a performance and I thought, oh, and that was that Snarky Puppy performance.
Wow.
I felt like that was special. I knew that was special because it was 6 minutes of information and then that weird thing that I do and then more information. I thought, oh, wow, regardless of anything, I know that I wasn't even present for this. This was great. This was, I was a channel for something great to come through.
What about the opposite? Have you ever done something that you thought was like, meh, it's all right. And then people were like, oh, my God.
She said, only this show. Like, this is no PBS. This is no Charlie Rose, nigga.
No, all the time. I feel like, you know, there's some nights I feel like I could have done better. And people are like, oh, it was great. And I suffer from a little bit of imposter syndrome sometimes. But really
I know exactly what you're talking about. Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. You have a Donny Hathaway collection, the Purple Vinyl. What is that all about?
That's the re-release of Donny Hathaway and the vinyl. The label was like, why do we make it purple? It's really royal. It's really regal. And I thought it was so beautiful. And I have a record player now, so I'm excited because, you know, purple's kind of...
It's weird because I was in a place, I was gigging in Austin. I stayed in a place called The Otis. And they had record players in the rooms. I think I told you this yesterday. And it was Donny Hathaway album.
Oh, that's so awesome.
It was Otis Redding, Donny Hathaway, Prince, and one other black dude. Because everybody else was white, so I had to play. to be so indelible that they're going actually back in time. Your father was so indelible that they're going, that his homage is presenting him in his original form. Like it's not, they're not going to, they're going to present him in his original form. That, I think that's quintessentially resonant. That's got to make you very proud.
It does. I'm honored. And, you know, what I do is every day just try to show up and kill it like he did and represent both of my parents. And I always say that he was here in a very small way so that I could get here. And I'm here in a big way so that he could stay here. It's a cycle. And
that's dope. That's dope. Did you, how old were you when he passed? How old?
10.
You were 10. Do you remember a lot about him? Because it's the funniest thing to me is I lost my father 3 years ago, and I'm having a hard time remembering his face or his voice. Mm-hmm. It's really, and that's 3 years. So that's really
That will change. I think that will change.
How do you keep connected to him? Because that's a very young. You're very young, and that's a very long amount of time. And he's been gone, and you've been having to make it on your own for a while. So how do you keep him here?
You know the music. I don't even have to worry about it. He's as close as my ears and my mouth. He's as close as me wanting to make that sound and listen to that sound. So I'm very lucky, you know, because I really miss my grandma and I don't remember the sound of her voice. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
So My dad's voice, I hear it somewhere every day almost, and I hear it when I'm talking or singing.
Yeah, see, so, but I think the song she pitched at the beginning, You Don't Remember Your Dead Grandma, but that to me
yeah,
is
that's
that,
a winner. That is, that's a winner. Stick with that one, Layla.
It's dead grandma's song. I mean, it isn't the same kind. It doesn't have the cadence of this Christmas, but Dead Grandmama's song is a hit.
But it's good.
It's good.
So you're looking for? Are you looking forward to the Grammys? I should say. Are you looking forward to it?
I am. I'm looking forward to the Grammys. I'm interested to see how they're going to do it. They never disappoint. It's going to be interesting to watch it unfold in this sort of almost post. I'm gonna say almost post COVID way.
Right. Almost. Yeah.
Let's hope. I'm hoping and praying.
Are you ready to get back to the road? Ready to get back?
This is the longest time I haven't worked since like the early. It is horrible.
Yeah. I mean, the pandemic has affected people in so many different ways. Right. How has it affected you?
I mean, I've been it mostly looks like this.
Just looking around.
And now she's writing the dead grandmama song. That's how I look when that happens.
I wonder what my dead grandma doing.
I miss my band. I miss the conversations with the audience. I even miss sound check, which is my most hated part of the day. I will never take it for granted again.
You know what?
I miss being able to go out and see people.
It's almost like, for me, it is almost like I've lost myself. Like I'm unfamiliar with who I am because I was a thing for so long. I never am home. Like home feels like a vacation when I get here. So, but nobody. It's like being in Hawaii and hell at the same time. So it's
he's on a staycation.
There's a new song. Hawaii and hell and your grandmama gone. And I think I'll be better. Like I think I'll be. I know I'll be different when we hit the road, like for real, and are able to.
Are you back on the road at all?
I am, but it feels different because it's half rooms,
right?
So they're scared the whole time, and it feels like a testimony to how far you have. Half rooms usually when we grow up, that means you ain't shit. If you still selling half rooms 30 years in,
right.
So it feels different. But I'm getting to know more of the things that I believe from an artistic. You think you'll be different when you go back?
It's hard to say. I was literally watching you the other night, King's Comedy, all of y'all, and I was thinking, I wonder if we will return to, you know, rooms with 10, 20,000 people in them. I don't generally play rooms that big, but to even go into a room of 500 people, I just wonder what it's going to look like. I think my first probably 10 shows, I'm just going to be crying with a snot bubble in my nose. I can't wait to figure out whatever it's going to be because I'm ready to do my thing. That's kind of how I relate to the world. That's my drug. And I'm sober right now, and it's kind of a drag.
Yeah. I envy you. I envy you. That won't be on my album, Sober, right now. Hey, good luck on your 9,000 Grammys.
Yes.
And your new hit, Grandmama's Dead. Get over it.
Thank you, Layla.
Layla Hathaway. Thank you, baby. Bye-bye. Take care.
Welcome back to DL Uncut. It's time to find out what you need to know. Here's Sybil Wilkes.
Yay, Sybil.
Hey, Sybil. Like a necklace, girl.
Thank you, darling. I loved everything about your look, Jasmine.
Yes.
And you too, DL.
Okay.
So I want to talk about this COVID vaccine. Have you all made a decision whether you're going to get the shot?
We've already gotten the vaccine.
You did?
Yes.
Okay, good. Because we really need to encourage our people to get this vaccine, how very important it is, how we can start to get on with our lives and be a part of regular life again, whatever regular and normal life looks like post-COVID. But it's we are having a lot of people who are distrusting this vaccine, as you know, whether it's the Johnson & Johnson brand and whatever issues you have with that, or just the vaccine itself. And of course, historically, we have good reason to, of course, with the Tuskegee experiment and things like that, even in terms of distrust with the important hospitals like Johns Hopkins and what they have done with people in the past. So, and I know this is your favorite, but invoking National Women's History Month, EDL, we're going to pay salute to Black women who have paved the way in making this vaccine possible.
I love Black women. What do you mean? All my mistresses have been Black. What are you saying? Don't be silly.
So we want to give a real good tribute, a big tribute, a big hurrah and congratulations to Dr. Kismekia Corbett. She, of course, is the immunologist who was the lead in the research for and in bringing the Moderna vaccine to us. This young woman is showing us and showing our young girls and young boys about the importance of their participation in this horrible disease and in eradicating it. And secondly, want to give a tribute to Nurse Sandra Lindsay. She was the first person, the very first person to take the vaccine. And she said she wanted to make an impression. She wanted to lead by example to people who look like her. This is so important. And we have to get past all of these other things that are holding us back, because our good health and being able to get back to our lives, to hug people again, to go out and hang out and smoke cigars and have drinks with the girls and things like that, that's really important.
You never did that with me, damn it. You did. What the hell?
It's still important.
Right.
During National Women's History Month, we can do that, DL, if I get the vaccine as well. But I want people to really understand the importance and really to pay tribute to these women who have paved the way and leading by example on how this vaccine should be used and how we can get rid of this disease.
You know, it's interesting. My mother said, I bought you in this world, I'll take you out. And this young woman who invented the vaccine said, and she do, I'll make a vaccine for it. That's
you know what? We're looking for that.